Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Cleveland Cavaliers. 30 minutes in the preseason on NBA TV as the Cavaliers turn the page without that guy, LeBron James, and we're here to clock it all. From 66 wins to 61 wins last year, where do they go this year? We start with this. Is it a rebuild? Is it a retool? Is it a hold on for dear life scenario? Or are they punting? What is the status of the Cavs?
Well, I'm going to say probably fewer wins.
You think?
Go out on the limb. No, I think...
Like 20, you know, right?
But, I mean, honestly, Rick, I think during the time that LeBron was in Cleveland, over the past couple of years, Danny Ferry was doing a lot of retooling.
There no question.
A lot of pieces brought in as supporting players around LeBron as specialists. That's sort of in the aftermath of LeBron heading south is what they're left with, is the pieces that were around LeBron James as the centerpiece.
And when you look at the roster guys and you kind of say, you know what, these names have proven themselves in our league and been productive. If you can play hard every night, you can steal 10 or 15 wins, then the rest of them kind of fall into place.
And we'll see what the Cavaliers do this year, but right now we are analyzing them.
You have any competitive bones in your body, you know, you look at this as a golden opportunity for a lot of the guys that we have, because they're going to be asked to do things that they're capable of doing, but they haven't had to do over the last three or four seasons because they had such a great player here.
We got to think about who is here. We got to think about, you know, all the pieces we have, all the guys that, you know, are very excited to show, you know, what they can do.
The season's here, and so we're focusing on moving forward. We've got a couple new faces on the team, and most importantly, a different philosophy. So there'll be an adjustment time, but I think, you know, it's going to have to be a collective effort.
After posting the most wins in the NBA the last two regular seasons, do they make the playoffs this year?
Rick, if they take advantage of this early opportunity to embrace this new style of play and how unpredictable they are, early on in the season, they might get enough wins to be a playoff team. So Cavs Heat, first round maybe, 1-8?
Sounds good to me.
I just hit record because my dog KD. But hey, KD, come on. All right, okay. So this is KD, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So can you see that? No, you probably can't. But this is a Warriors.
Very blurry.
This is a Warriors.
No.
So it's not KD. It's KD, right?
Ouch.
The reason I started recording there is because I've talked about my dog before, the infamous KD.
Yeah.
The morning that I woke up and was like, holy crap, Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors, yeah. She shit in my bed.
That's what happens when KD signs with the Warriors. Everything just shits.
I feel like it's more than appropriate to introduce our guest today from the Down to Dunk podcast with a story about shit, because I think at this point it's like a featured segment on Down to Dunk that there's at least an average of one story about feces in some sort of capacity.
Like, yes, we do. Episode. We have mostly approval for that, but then we have a few listeners that disapprove of our bathroom humor. So we will not stop with the bathroom humor. So if you like NBA and bathroom humor, the Down to Dunk podcast is for you.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast, which is Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast, then, of course, you like at least one of those things. You know, if you look at ABPN, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, you know, my podcast is mostly about basketball, but I think we have two or three different shit-oriented podcasts, and, you know, you can take your pick. You can choose number one or number two.
There you go.
Wait. So I got all the jokes today. Hopefully my guest does too. I'm sure he will. Andrew, you know, I'm on a really bad streak with pronouncing last names, but I'm going to give it a try anyways, because, you know, no matter what adversity you face, you still have to keep going forward and trying, which I think is the Thunder's motto for this year. So Andrew Schlecht.
That's it. 1,000%. Yes.
Holy
got it.
Shit. I thought that was a long shot. And, you know, I figure since this podcast is going to be largely about Russell Westbrook that my long shots wouldn't be super accurate.
No, dude, you got it. That was that's a painful way to describe it. But yes, that's you got it.
You know, and before I have a whole theme like hammered out for this podcast. Before we start with that, do you just wish that he stopped taking threes? Because that's an option. I mean, that's what Dwayne Wade did his whole career. He did something else. You know what I mean?
I think I don't know that I wish that he wouldn't take threes. I just think that he should stop taking the 18 seconds left in the shot clock pull up threes. There are times where he needs to shoot threes. This team is lacking a ton of 3-point shooters, and if the team just doesn't shoot them, like if Russ doesn't shoot them, I think that will be ultimately damaging to the team. So I do think he needs to shoot threes, but I think just the 18 seconds on the shot clock, I'm bringing the ball up the court, and I have like Isaiah Thomas on me, I'm just going to pull up. Like those need to stop.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably a happy ground between, you know, the career average behavior of Dwayne Wade when it comes to threes, which is just like don't ever take them pretty much, maybe mm-hmm. 8 a year. There's probably a happy medium somewhere between Russell Westbrook just hucking up stupid shots or ill-informed shots, I guess, and you know, Dwayne Wade just not taking any. It'll be interesting to see when or if that happy medium is ever met by Russell Westbrook. I'm not so sure. So I'm going to introduce this next segment, okay, with, you know, when I was little, my dad took me to a collectible trading card store and bought me a holographic Charizard, right? A while ago, you know, more than a decade ago.
Okay.
It was $120 yes. bucks, you know? It was like, it's the dopest shit. It was like, I was the big cock on the block, so to speak. And like, I gave it to my neighbor across the fence because like, I have a really like innate desire for, you know, other people to be happy. I think that, you know, most people who know me would describe me as like, you know, someone who I get really upset when other people are upset. That being said, I'm not saying this to make you upset or to like be Skip Bayless or anything like that. I think the Thunder are going to be really bad.
Okay. Make the case.
Well, you know, this is Almighty Ballin', not Down to Dunk, and you're my guest, so you can't tell me what to do.
I actually want to hear it because, like, I mean, there's honestly a ton of theories about this team, and nobody knows. Like, nobody knows what they're going to do. No one knows exactly what they're going to look like. You know, there's people that are saying they're going to be a top 10 defense. I completely disagree with that. And there's people saying that they could, you know, be like the 28th ranked offense. Like, there's just, it's all over the map. Nobody knows what they're going to look like. So I honestly want to hear it.
Yeah, that was Fred Katz said top 10. Okay. So, you know, that's actually an interesting place to start. So what difficulty I'm going to assume that you've been running into and that I think that really everyone is running into, to varying degrees, everyone wants their neighbor to have a holographic Charizard, right? You know, like some people don't want a holographic Charizard enough to give their Charizard away, but no one wants to like go and say that, you know, you had a holographic, you know, Kevin Durant edition Charizard and, you know, the neighborhood bullies like, you know, kicked your ass and took it from you. And like, no one's going to come up and like kick you while you're down. No one like, you know, maybe some people on Twitter, but for the most part, no media members, no like real human beings want to pile on the Thunder right now. So I think that there's always explanations for why the Thunder might be good. And there are reasons why they might be good. But I think that people are choosing to like not weigh the reasons that they will be bad as much as the reasons that they'll be good, because like it doesn't feel right to do that. You know what I mean?
True. I just need to know. Like tell me let's establish what is bad. Like are they gonna be like the battling for the 8th seed? Are they, do you think they're going to be the 10th seed? Like what's bad? Are they winning 30 games? Are they winning, like, what's bad to you?
Somewhere between like 30 and 40. If I had to guess, I'd say like not like 31, but maybe like 34.
That's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad. And I don't like to say that. That doesn't like give me any pleasure. It feels wrong to say that, but I'm sure you remember. How long have you been, an NBA fan or covering the league? You know, are you aware that there was a point in which LeBron James left Cleveland? It was like a obscure news story.
I've been a fan since 1992, like following the league since 1992. So
okay, so you probably heard about it, or maybe heard some whispers about that time that LeBron James left Cleveland.
Heard about it.
You know, the owner's response was to write an essay in Comic Sans about how they're going to win a championship. And no one said, like, hey, you know what? The Cavs lost LeBron. They're going to be worse. I bet they'll be 40 games worse because they went from 61 to 21, right? But they did. No one wanted to say, you know, not only are you not going to sort of be contending for the playoffs, you're going to be really bad.
Yeah. I'm going to buck that comparison real quick because the top five guys in minutes played that season for the Cavs were Anton Jameson, Anderson Varejao, Mo Williams, Anthony Parker, and J.J. Hickson. Like, that was a brutal team after Bron was gone. Like, that was a brutal, brutal team.
Yeah, you know, what's wrong with Anthony Parker, first of all, okay? At least he can hit a three-pointer.
35-year-old Anthony Parker?
He was a good three-point shooter. You got to at least give him that. But you know, you just sort of listed a bunch of names. You, in the context, you know, looking at it now, we can say like, oh, those guys weren't good and their reputations are stained because we got to see what they looked like without LeBron James. But who's to say that, I mean, I think probably, and again, this feels awful, Andre Roberson is going to be like a joke.
Andre Roberson? Well, what's the expectation for him, I guess, would be the question. Because I think that the expectations are that he'll be a good defender and a slasher, and that's probably about it.
I guess let me rephrase that, because I actually like Andre Roberson. So I think that there's a stronger possibility than people, I think, are generally willing to concede that 7 or 8 years from now, people are going to say a similar thing about a superstar that left their team and say, like, yeah, but that team had Andre Roberson. Like, he couldn't shoot for shit. You remember how bad of a shooter that guy was? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're definitely going to be saying those things. Like, no, even if he's a good player, they're going to say those things that he couldn't shoot. Like, he will never be a shooter. But he does have the NBA skill of being an elite defender. Like, he won't lose that. He's still young. He's not 35 like Anthony Parker was, or 34 like Anton Jameson was. Like, that, I don't know. I understand that. I mean, Durant left a massive hole, but not. It's not as bad as what the Cavs were in.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to drop 40 wins. I'm not trying to say that. The main point I brought that up, though, is that I think that there's a degree of mathematical inevitability to having someone who takes, you know, we'll say there's 100 possessions. We'll average it out just for argument's sake. 100 possessions in a game. So, you know, if your superstar is taking 30 of those possessions and being – over those 30 possessions, 10 points more efficient than everyone else in the league, the mathematical equivalent of that is to just start out with 10 extra points. That's what the basic idea between, like, box score plus minus is, sort of. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If you're just removing that 10-point head start, I did this exercise last night, actually, where I took LeBron's on-off metrics for the year that he left Cleveland, and it was 14.6. And I went back to that 61-win team and compared it across their schedule and took away 15 points from their wins to see if they would lose. And over the course of their first 30 games, they won 4 games. So if you do that equivalent thing with the Thunder, if you're going to say the Thunder are going to be 10 points less efficient given the average amount of possessions in a game, you're just deducting 10 points all across the board for the entire schedule, and the Thunder would have won like 30 games last year.
Well, I think that the biggest difference is that you have the players behind Durant last year are like just not even it's not even comparable to what LeBron had behind him in Cleveland. Like, Russell Westbrook is an incredible player. Steven Adams is going to get better. Like, there were no players on the Cavs that were going to get better. like they were all older. They were gunning for just that one. They wanted that one title. They wanted that thing. And Sam Presti's, he wants sustainability, and he's got it with this team. Oladipo's still developing. Adams is developing. You know, even Enes Kanter's a guy that can come in and score more than he was asked to last year. Man, I can't get there.
It's not an apples for apples comparison. The basic point I was trying to make is that losing a superstar is like losing a piece of your soul, and it's a bigger deal than I think that people realize. But it's one, not as dramatic. It's not going to be as dramatic a drop off for, you know, a bunch of reasons that you brought up. But from the spacing to their depth is really strange to me. You know, Oladipo and Westbrook are basically the same player and you have two of them. And then Kanter and Adams play the same position. You have two of them. And they're unarguably the best four players on your team. And then your best small forward is like, what, Kyle f***ing Singler?
It's a problem, no doubt.
It just seems like this team is broken.
They are, undoubtedly, because the plan was that Kevin Durant was going to re-sign, and they probably have the worst forward rotation in the league. They're definitely bottom three forward rotation in the league. It's a massive hole. But they're elite at the guard positions, and they're elite at the big man positions. They've just got a big hole right where the KDs are. So. Yeah, it's a problem for sure.
Yeah, I think what might be the defining issue for me in terms of their depth, it isn't so much that it's all at the same position, because if you can play a lineup that's five shooting guards or whatever, you know, if your five best players are shooting guards, that's fine as long as you can play all of them and have that be a positive net rating. And it's really difficult for me to look at any given Thunder lineup and imagine them not either having massive exploitable holes in their defense or completely suffocated on offense. You're almost choosing whether you want to be stagnant on offense or like a piece of construction paper that someone's holding taut and you just put your hand.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I mean, a lot of people, and this is also a really bad comparison, a lot of people like to compare it to the year, not this past season, but the season before, where they had all the injuries, and then toward the end of the season, they had kind of a similar roster with Russ and Adams and Kanter. Although those guys are 2 years younger then and not as good as they are today. But they got to 45 wins with this. That was a bad season. Russell Westbrook on his own can create a good offense, and he proved it that season with a worse roster than he had then. Even less spacing, and you had Mitch McGarry playing a lot. It was not good, but they're still winning games. Russell Westbrook on his own can do a lot. Steven Adams is going to be able to take on a load. They're going to need to have somebody come in and shoot. Ilyasova is going to play. I don't love Ilyasova. I'm probably one of the more pessimistic people about Ilyasova that covers the Thunder. And I don't think he's going to be that good, but I do think he'll shoot. He'll be a shooter. So he'll space the floor. And then they have to, like, if they can get anything out of Anthony Morrow or Alex Sabrinas, like, they've got to figure that out. But I would also caution and say that this roster is incomplete. Sam Presti knows it. Sam Presti is actively looking for a deal. So I would be really surprised if this team looks the same, certainly after the trade deadline. But even before that, I think that there's something's going to be done.
So earlier I did a horrific job of making a comparison between this team and the Cavs to make a point that I ultimately didn't even end up making. So I'm going to try to redeem myself here and make a little bit more of a straightforward apples to apples comparison. This team sort of reminds me a lot of, you remember in 2014, that Pistons team with Brandon Jackson that was starting Josh Smith at the small forward? Or not Brandon Jackson, Brandon Jennings.
Brandon Jennings, yeah. He busted his Achilles tendon that year. Yeah.
It was that year that they started out 5-23.
Okay.
And then they traded for Brandon Jackson, you know, waived Josh Smith. You remember they just waived Josh Smith one day, right?
I do. That was a strange, strange day.
That was because they started 5-23. And in a less conceptual, more like player-to-player comparison, I just think this roster is constructed a lot like the Pistons. And a lot of the reasons that people are saying to themselves, like, okay, they'll be fine, it sounds really familiar. It's like, we'll make Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond work together, right? I mean, they're both so talented. Even though they're both centers, we can start them next to each other. And, like, even though the small forward, Andre Roberson / Josh Smith, really can't shoot, we just won't shoot all that many threes. But, you know, we're going to have so much size and be able to rebound so much. We'll be able to compensate for that. And it'll be okay that, like, da-da-da-da-da. And it seems like all the reasons why, you know, all the reasons why they'll say, okay, well, look at our lineup. We're going to be good at this. They were right. They were good at rebounding. You know, they were long. They crashed the boards really well. It's just ultimately like it's a broken system. You just can't play that way. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree for sure that the Thunder are redundant at positions. That they have too much talent in their big men. They have too much talent in their guards, and they have no talent in their forwards. But a lot of the issues with the Pistons that you're with are personalities. Like Josh Smith, like they told him to leave and go home. And there's not a guy like that on the Thunder, this Thunder roster. These guys are proven players. They've all played in the playoffs, besides the guys that are new. They've proven to play together. I mean, Cantor has even mentioned Adams as like a mentor to him. And he took a role. I mean, he makes like three or four times the amount that Adams does, but he still comes off the bench and plays 20 minutes and he's super happy and just wears his mustache. So I understand like they have too much talent in two positions and not any in the three and the four, but I just don't see them like collapse. That Pistons team just had a lot of personality problems. And the Thunder just don't have that. Like they have like a lot of really good guys. Like intentionally, they have a lot of really good guys.
Well, so if you're saying that it was a personality thing as opposed to a fit thing, I can't really. I'm not like willing to like put aside the amount of time to like debate that, but like I disagree. I think it was very much so a fit thing, and that was a fundamental issue. And even beyond that, just breaking down like basketball, even, you know, moving away from roster construction and just thinking about the way that geometrically a basketball court needs to work in terms of spacing and things that are happening. So putting aside the forward positions, right, which is the Thunder's biggest problem, right?
Yes. That and shooting are their two biggest problems.
Yeah, definitely. But positionally, like small forward, power forward are pretty much trash. So putting that aside and like going with the players that they do have, even that falls apart under a little bit more scrutiny because, you know, the reason why Fred Katz has said and written that they're going to be a top 10 defense is because Russell and Oladipo together are going to gamble and try to create offense in the full court. And sort of use their athleticism to, you know, get off in the break and then just sort of, you know, out explosive people. But if you're just gambling on everything, then, you know, you're leaving like a big gaping hole in the middle of the paint, right? If that's how you're going to choose to compensate for your lack of shooting, then you're leaving the paint open pretty consistently. And you know, you're now asking either Steven Adams or Cantor to like to deal with that. So. Let's say that you decide to do that and play Adams at center. Now your floor spacing is trash. You have Adams, Oladipo, and Westbrook. And so even – I mean, honestly, I think even if you have two like pretty much elite shooters at those two positions, from the like top of the three-point line to the basket, that like middle of the court, like you – as long as you like put three players near the basket, like it's fine. And then you can just have man-to-man coverage in the corners. It's like, yeah, Adams, Westbrook, and Oladipo are three really, really good players. And, you know, I have different feelings about Cantor and Oladipo and Westbrook and Adams than other people, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But, like, individually, they're all great. They just don't work together, though.
Yeah, the fit's not, it's not a clean fit with, I mean, I agree with that. It's not a clean fit with them. It would be great if like Oladipo is an elite shooter, then like, yeah, things fit great. It's hard to say that like their best lineup is going to be with those four guys on the court. I think offensively, Cantor and Westbrook can carry an offense almost entirely on their own. Like they're both that good. Westbrook's that good at getting to the basket. Is he the best at finishing? No, but if he has the best offensive rebounding big around him, he cleans up a lot. The pick and roll is going to be really hard for teams to cover. Russell Westbrook is really hard to cover. He's hard to game plan for. That's why he had so many triple doubles. He's become a much better passer. The offense, it's going to take some figuring out for sure. But I do think that they can make things work. If you have one floor spacer like Ilyasova out there, like you can't just completely leave him. But there just aren't a lot of guys that can guard Russ. And then when you add Oladipo to the mix, who, if he can do 35% from three again, that would be wonderful, but he's still not a guy that you have to just, you know, glue yourself to. I mean, you're right in a lot of ways that the offense is not, it's not clean. It's not like a, you know, if you play with these guys in 2K, it's not like you're going to find yourself frustrated a lot because they're not going to be able to do the things that like the Warriors or the Spurs or whoever else can do because they just, they're missing pieces. But again, I think that this team is incomplete. They're developing. I think that Presti really just wants to see what do we have? What do we have here? They're going to go through training camp. Media days tomorrow. They start training camp on Saturday. They want to see what do we have and what can we do, what can't we do, and I would expect them to make some moves relatively soon, you know, before February for sure, to kind of balance out the roster because it's very imbalanced currently.
So if you have Oladipo and Westbrook and a center and mm-hmm. So your pick and roll, is that it? Because like normally if your best players are primary ball handlers and big men, you know, mm-hmm. like you're probably going to be a pick and roll heavy team. So like, yep. is that what the expectation is?
For sure. I mean, that's going to be their bread and butter is a pick and roll because that's what Westbrook's elite at that. And Cantor is an elite pick and roll player and so is Adams. And I mean, that's playing to their strengths. I think they're going to have to, this is a team that didn't set a lot of picks last year. They would set like a pin down screen quite often, but they just didn't set a lot of off ball screens. And I think that they're going to have to like there's going to have to be some motion because last year it's, you know, let's set a pin down for Kevin Durant and let's, you know, he's going to curl up and he's going to either, you know, take the ball to the rim or he's going to shoot that shot or he's going to ISO and back up. But that's how we're going to get him the ball. But I've said this before. That I think this will be the most system-based offense that the Thunder has ever seen out of necessity because they're not going to be able to just win on sheer talent alone. They're going to have more of a game plan on offense. They're going to have to run off-ball screens. They're going to have to rely on a lot of slashing and cutting and creativity. It's Billy Donovan, you know, proved in the playoffs that he can make those things happen. But can they do it over the course of 82 games with, you know, all these different opponents? It's going to be trial and error, a ton of it.
Well, and that's part of the reason why I think their regular season is going to be so bad is because like for the majority of last year's regular season, Billy Donovan was just trying to feel it all out and he lost a lot of games because he was doing that. But he did have a vastly more talented roster to be doing that with. Now you're going to have like a much worse roster, if only because Kevin Durant is gone, and he's mm-hmm. still going to have to be figuring it out as he goes along as a second-year coach in a totally different roster construction. But I'm unfortunately for you not going to like give you any space to respond to that because like I don't know what I'm doing, and whoever decided that I should host a podcast was dumb. It was me. I decided that I should. So I want to get back to this idea that this pick and roll is going to be functional if you have Westbrook, okay. and you know, Westbrook, Oladipo, and like one of two big men. So like, you know, again, ignoring defense. So far we're ignoring defense and we're ignoring the fact that like the forward positions are trash. We're putting aside for a moment these glaring weaknesses and just dealing with what should be their strengths. So we'll ignore defense and just put Anthony Morrow, who's like their best shooter and is like a great shooter, and then like, I guess, Ersan Ilyasova, you know, as the other forward.
Sure.
Probably that's their best two offensive players. Defense would be bad, but the offense should be fine. But when you're hiding, you know, if you're the Warriors, you would hide Steph Curry on whoever's sitting in the corner. You could play, if you were matching up against the Thunder, you'd put your worst defender on one guy in a corner and then like put your other worst defender on the other guy who's sitting in the corner. Why can't you just pack the paint with, you know, everyone who's involved in the pick and roll scheme there and just say like, okay, I'm never going to go over on screens and I'm never going to ice. I'm always going to drop back. And like, go ahead and take all the 16 footers you want. Take all the mid-range pull-up jump shots that you want, Oladipo slash Westbrook. Be my guest. It's not going to work out well for you. Or take threes. Like, do it, please. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that they want to generate those shots for Westbrook for sure, because that's part of his offense. He takes a ton of those shots and he makes a ton of them too. And just like you said, like Oladipo is a lot like Westbrook and they love kind of the same spots on the floor. And that's one of the reasons why they don't fit really well. But they're both really good mid-range shooters. And the Spurs proved last year that, you know, mid-range shots, they're definitely not in vogue, but they're not going to kill your team as long as you're really good at them. So if Westbrook is continually given that shot and he keeps making it, they're going to have to adjust. I mean, Russell Westbrook in general, like, you can't just guard him with one person. And he's very good at getting to the line. He can get to the basket. I mean, there just aren't a lot of point guards that are going to be able to keep him from getting to the basket. And he gets fouled a lot, and he hits his free throws. So, I mean, like, there's a lot of workable things within that, even if that's the way that teams play them.
Well, being good at a mid-range pull-up, the mid-range pull-up is like just like the worst shot in the game, though.
It is if you're like average at it, but if you're above average, then it's actually a good. It's a bad shot because most players aren't that great at them, and might as well just take a couple steps back. But if you're an elite mid-range shooter, then you know it's not a bad shot.
Well, so I mean, what percentage are we talking about as like a realistic pull-up mid-range jumper? I'm looking up right now, like, how good, because I'm actually pretty sure that Russell Westbrook was really bad in mid-range.
He may have been.
I'm trying to figure out whether Oladipo was, though. I pull up shooting.
From about 16 feet, he was 50% last year. And then when you drop him back to three, he's 32%.
So last year, okay, so player tracking, NBA defines it as any jump shot outside 10 feet where a player took one or more dribbles before shooting. Russell Westbrook shot an effective field goal percentage of 42.3%, which is not good. 42.3%. And I'm going to look up for the Magic. I'm not looking this up to belabor a point. I'm actually looking it up because I'm curious.
Yeah.
So 44.2% for Victor Oladipo. And the thing about having those pull-up mid-range jump shot type things is that can be a part of your game offensively in very particular situations for particular players. But it pretty much needs to be when you're next to a guy like Kevin Durant, who's been like the second most efficient player over the last 10 years, right behind LeBron, you know? I just feel like, you know, it's like going back to that point that I failed to make at the start of the podcast. It's like if both teams have 100 possessions to work with and your team now is like 10% less efficient, right? So in any given game that's like basically the same, you're going to score 90 points instead of 100. Like, you're losing a 10-point advantage and like a 10-point differential. I don't need to tell you that that makes you lose like 30 games.
Sure.
if that's like a significant part of your offense, is just pull up mid-range jump shots from Oladipo and Westbrook. Another reason why that's like really problematic too is because none of that interaction is ever going to be between Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, because like a lot of the times when Russell Westbrook was shooting a pull-up mid-range jump shot, it was because his man had to switch or otherwise deal with the fact that offensively Kevin Durant was floating around. Now you can just always back, like just always drop. That's statistically the best way to play a defense in terms of guarding the pick and roll if you're going to be shooting twos. Like, it's how the Spurs had the best regular season defense in league history last year. It's just like always dropping their bigs.
Sure.
Another reason why that's super problematic, and like, this is another deeper principle of basketball, is if you're choosing to play your game this way with Russell Westbrook and Oladipo, where you're gambling and trying to like break out in full court to make up for inefficiency in the half court, which I think is something that they feel like they need to do to be good, that's really exhausting. So on defense, they're going to be constantly gambling or constantly switching, which is like a little bit easier, but I don't think that's going to be viable given like some of their limitations at other positions. And sure. So if you're playing this really exhausting defense and then on offense trying to either get an efficient shot in a pick and roll where the big drop back, which basically means trying to contort yourself around Roy Hibbert, that's a really exhausting thing to do. That's why like players get lazy and do pull up mid-range jump shots even though they're not efficient. It's because they get tired, basically. And I just feel like if you think that Russell Westbrook is going to be taking efficient shots and also playing good defense and also carrying the load of losing Kevin Durant, I understand that the narrative around Russell Westbrook is that he's superhuman, but that's physically impossible.
I don't think he is going to do those things. And I don't think that the entire burden of Kevin Durant leaving is all on him. That's why like these developing players are a really big deal. Like Steven Adams developing into like a top tier center is like a really big deal for this team. And if he does that, he'll be able to take a part of the load. Oladipo coming in the fold, they haven't really had a guard that can play like him. Really, they haven't had a guard that can play like him in a long time. So like he's gonna be able to carry the load. I mean, last year like their shooting guard position was just a big fat mess. It was, you know, as bad as what we were talking about, their small forward position. Like it was Robertson and it was Anthony Morrow, and it was like, they're if you could just combine those two, that would be a great player. But separately, there's a lot to be desired with both those guys. So now that problem is at the forward position, and obviously Oladipo is not going to come in and like take the place of Kevin Durant, but like he's a good passer. He's going to be able to create. I also think we have to look at like the competition that they're going to play against. Like there's just not that many great teams anymore. Even in the Western Conference, it's just a lot of mediocre teams. In the Eastern Conference, I mean, it's even worse. Like it's just gotten to be just, there's a lot of really bad teams, and there's a lot of teams that Thunder are going to beat up on just for the simple fact that there's just not as many good teams anymore. It's the Warriors, it's the Cavs, and then like who else is elite? Like you could say the Clippers, you could say, who else? Like there's, like they're picked to win 45 games. That's what Vegas says, and there's just not that many teams that are picked to win more than that. I mean, they have problems. The Thunder have problems. There's no doubt. They have holes. They're going to struggle at both ends at times, without a doubt. There are holes. But there are other teams that are going to have way more problems than the Thunder and don't have the guys like Russ that can carry your team. Steven Adams that will be able to carry the defense at times. They've got a lot of talent, and a lot of times talent wins in this league. And there's a lot of teams that just aren't very talented. I understand for sure the holes and the things that you've said make a lot of sense for sure. But they're going to be playing some bad teams a lot this season, just because the consolidation of superstar talent, it's all in Golden State.
Oh, God. Yeah, I see that reality the way that I would have explained it, so that it was, you know, in argument for how I don't think the Thunder will be good, is that the talent drop off from like number two, number three, number four, right? Like the fact that, like, you know, the Spurs and the Clippers, that there aren't like secondary elite teams in the Western Conference. It's like just the Golden State Warriors. Is that like the overall tide for everyone else rose, you know? And so that, yeah, it's evened out. And that just means that just barely the Thunder's head is underwater in every game that they play.
There's a lot of tight games.
So
it's going to be a really interesting season. Besides the fact that the Warriors are going to win the championship, it's going to be an interesting season.
Yeah, it sort of looks that way. But, you know, I don't want to talk anymore about how the Thunder are bad because, like, I feel like a bully, you know? And, like, I just... If I had a Kevin Durant Charizard to give you, I would give it to you, you know? I mean, Fred Katzen, like, it seems like the Thunder media is... They're smart, reasonable guys. They're not like Philly's media, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that there's reasons and there's logic behind them being what I think is wrong and saying, well, the Thunder could be good. There are reasons why the Thunder could be good. It's not like they're just pulling it out of their ass and being unreasonable. And like, I do want to go over some of the stuff that you think that the Thunder need to do or that you feel like the Thunder are going to do that are going to keep them being good. And I keep saying good, and I should probably like define good. What is good to the Thunder actually? What do you think their ceiling is?
Oh, I think that
what's a successful season for the Thunder, I guess.
If they can win 46 to 48 games, I think that that's a successful season for them.
Yeah. I mean, my argument is that there's too many holes in the boat, but the counter argument is that if those holes weren't there or could be compensated for, it's a way better boat than most boats.
Yes, you know? Russell Westbrook will do whatever he can to throw his whole body on those holes.
Yeah.
And he will all season.
Yeah, their talent, if it's properly utilized, gives them a higher ceiling than I think a lot of other teams that are in similarly fractious situations. You know, it's like, because like you said, you know, Russell Westbrook's going to be covering for it. And outside of having the more singular talents, and what I mean is like Andre Roberson's a really good defender, like elite defender, but nothing else. Cantor's a really good post offensive player, but nothing else. Even outside of that, the dynamism and ability to sort of do it all that Westbrook has, I think it'll be really interesting to see if that's just not being optimistic though.
Yeah.
So Westbrook has to be better than good, worse than elite. That's what Westbrook needs to be on defense for the Thunder to be like good, you know?
Yeah. That's a dangerous proposition for me. He's never been a good defender in the NBA. He has the body of a good defender and he has the ability to be a good defender. He just hasn't been, you know? I mean, like you just look at his numbers and you're like, oh, there's just, and he has stretches where he's good. He has like, he's had stretches in the playoffs where he's been dominant, but overall, like in the regular season, he'll do good defensive things, but he doesn't do them consistently enough. He's not fighting over screens like he should. He falls asleep off the ball. You know, he should probably be killed a little bit more for his defense, like James Harden is. It's just not as apparent, and he will do things on defense that will make you think, oh, he's a really good defender. Like, oh, he just stripped Steph Curry and just dunked it. And wow, that's amazing. Like, he's an amazing defender. He just has like explosions of good defense. So I think it's going to be hard for him to like rein that in. And I think that Donovan wants to, and he tried to more last year, but you know, it's just, it happens some in the playoffs, but ultimately, I think it's going to be tough for him to carry the load on offense and then also be as good as you saying that as you say he needs to be.
Yeah, and that's sort of why I'm skeptical, and that also sort of explains why you said that you were skeptical about the Thunder being a top 10 defense, because yes. Like you know, if you have, you said he has the body of a good defender. If you have like two physical frameworks that look like Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo side by side, and you're saying like, this is my backcourt, that should be you know, if not the best backcourt defensively in the league, it should be like the second or third, but
it looks very good.
Yeah. I'm back after a brief break. My guest for today had to jump in the car and race somewhere. Presumably he's leaving.
Racing.
Presumably he's leaving like Anthony Slater.
Anthony Slater.
Yeah. Yes. Are you pulling Anthony Slater? Did your conversation with me make you compelled to, like, okay, screw this, I'm covering the Warriors?
No, I'm solidified. I'm Russell Westbrook. I'm sitting here. Slater broke my heart. That dude's good. I hate that he's gone.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. I feel like everyone was kind of surprised.
Anthony Slater broke my heart.
Oh, yeah. He's talked about that on a couple of podcasts. The story sounds fishy to me, you know. I mean, I think there's something more than meets the eye. I think there might have been, you know, like the rumors about Russell Westbrook and KD not getting along. It must be that, you know, we were talking about Cats. Like, it must be him and Cats, like, you know, disagreeing about something.
he's a good dude. He's from there. He always wanted to go back, from my understanding, and there's just not a more perfect situation for him to go back to, and the Mercury were recruiting him from what I understand, and, you know, good for him. It's a massive, massive career move for him, so he deserves anything he gets. He's a very, very good NBA writer.
You could say that about Kevin Durant, though, now, right? I mean,
well, Slater never pledged his allegiance and never acted like he wanted to stay. He, Slater always talked about how much he loved going back to California. So Slater's fine. KD, on the other hand, you know, he and his people let out that he was 90% coming back to see. Slater never said that. So I could be mad at KD.
Huh. I'm not all that, even though my dog's name is KD, it's just because I've always named my dogs after basketball players. My last dog's name was Kobe, and then when I when I adopted KD, her name was Sadie, so it just, like, made sense.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's close, yeah.
But I'm using our final 20 minutes really well, I think, so... We can just run through. So the first thing that the Thunder need to do to be good, that both of us are skeptical about, is Westbrook being good at defense. And if you think that they're going to be sort of, did you say like a 45-ish, you know, somewhere between like 42 and 49, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair range.
Yeah, and I mean, I assume that if you don't think that Westbrook is going to take a significant step on defense, but you still think that they're going to be that good, then you think that Donovan is going to do a really good job coaching. I put that for number three, but that's a big element of it. Is, you know, we've seen sort of time and time again how vital good defensive coaching is to a good defense, you know?
Sure.
And if Westbrook isn't going to be better, then Donovan's system just has to be really good if they're going to be, you know, relatively inefficient but still, you know, 40 plus win team.
Yeah, I mean, and they brought, I mean, there's just a lot that remains to be seen with the defense. They brought in Adrian Griffin to be their defensive guy this season, so he's new. He's got a good pedigree from, he coached under Thibodeau. It's just some great experience, but it just remains to be seen what the scheme will look like, and they're going to be a lot different. You know, there will be lineups where they can switch everything, but it's just not, they're not going to be able to do that a lot. They're, like, I can imagine one lineup being elite on defense. It's Russ, Oladipo, Robertson, and then it's kind of like, who cares who plays the four, and then Adams. You can plug it, it's over there. You know, if you want to go smaller and put Kyle Singler there, who's probably a better defender than Ilya Sova, that's fine. The bottom falls out whenever you bring guys off the bench. Yeah. Cameron Payne's going to play a lot. He's a really fun offensive player, and he's super skilled, but he's super skinny, and he can really only guard ones, and he really can't do that. And his cancer Although he improved last year, he's still one of the worst defensive bigs in the league. Kyle Singler is at best a mediocre defender, and then we all know that Anthony Morrow can't move his feet. Alex Brinas is going to play this year because they need his shooting. He's been pretty good in the EuroLeague, but he's played against EuroLeague guys, never defended at NBA level guards or forwards. So there's just not a good defender coming off the bench unless you want to like dig so deep that you somehow run into Josh Eustace and, you know, tell him to come in the game. Like he could be a good NBA defender, but what else can he do? And nobody really knows. And the answer could be nothing. So the defense for me, just the bottom drops out when you start letting guys in off the bench, and suddenly those holes that we talked about in the boat, there are a ton of them.
One of the things that I think the Thunder should do, and I think I could make a good argument for it, is I think the way that they have a good bench defensively is that you start Cantor at center and bring Adams off the bench.
Yeah, I think there's like a 2% chance that happens.
Actually, I think that Thunder fans think that there's a 2% chance that that happens. I think that there is a much higher chance of Cantor being the Thunder's leading scorer than I think people realize.
He's good, man. He's a very talented offensive player. His defense is just that bad that you just can't play him. Like, if he played 30 minutes a game, I would agree with that for sure. I just don't think they can play him 30 minutes a game, though. I think that's the only problem in my mind.
You remember that Bobcats team that had Al Jefferson starting at center, and then, you know, Mick Roberts, Gilchrist, Kemba, and Henderson?
Yeah, they were legit.
They were a top five defense.
Yeah, but if they had Steven Adams, they would have started him.
Well, they had Biombo, and they brought him off the bench.
Yeah, but that wasn't the Biombo that was with the Raptors. That was a fresh off the boat Biombo that's not very good.
Well, there's a couple of points there. I mean, he's always sort of been a analytics darling, or at least like a basketball nerd darling. I mean, Biombo anyways. And then on top of that, there's this assumption among Thunder fans that Steven Adams is going to replicate his play in the regular season next year. But I think that it's more likely that he takes a step forward and that step isn't as big as his playoff performance was. And there's a lot more of a regression to the mean than people realize. I don't think he's going to be all of a sudden a top five center in the league, you know?
He's got a ton of potential. He's not like Biombo. I know you're not trying to make that comparison, but he can play up a bit. And he's proven that not just in the playoffs, but in the regular season. And there's a lot of Thunder fans that probably do have too high of expectations for him, but I think that he can come in and he'll play 30 minutes tonight, 30 minutes plus, and he'll, you know, have a double-double, like 12 and 12 with a block. You know, he's not a guy that blocks the center shots. And I think it's a reasonable expectation for him, and his impact statistically will be more than what his box score numbers say. Like, he's very good, and it's not like he's like a 28-year-old player who just had one good year and hadn't shown anything else. He's a guy that's steadily improved. He just turned 23, and usually those guys just continue to get better rather than take massive setbacks. From what they do, like in the playoffs or anything, I believe in Steven Adams. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be Tyson Chandler-esque this season.
Yeah, and I've actually heard that comparison a couple of times. And man, Tyson Chandler was the Defensive Player of the Year and was in the top three for voting like multiple times. Tyson Chandler is really good. I mean, Steven Adams, I can't imagine him ever being as good as Tyson Chandler. But I really like Adams, and I don't mean to sound like I'm down on him. I just think that Thunder fans are taking a little too far, and I think that the current climate of the league is about to, I mean, this is like a personal belief that we can't thresh out, but I think that the world is going to realize pretty soon that, like, holy shit, Jahlil Okafor was the operating offensive hub of an entire team as a rookie, you know, and he's fucking 20 years old. You know, like, Cantor is young 20s. If he was playing in, like, the 90s and he was a four-year college student, he would be a sophomore or something like that, you know? All these, like, ultra-talented young big men, if you just let them naturally progress as defensive centers, once that starts happening again, I think that people are going to be like, I think Cantor's more valuable than Adams, personally. I think it's... What's up?
Oh, go ahead. I was just surprised to hear that. No, keep going.
I mean, like, really, it was a couple of years ago in, like, 28 minutes, and this was in, like, less than starters minutes. Cantor was averaging 17 points and 11.5-ish rebounds for the Jazz as, like, a 21-year-old. You know, you can say, like, yeah, Cantor has some athletic limitations, and so does Jahlil Okafor, but the best rim protector in the league last year was Tim Duncan, and he's, like, 70 years old. So, I mean, as you start to put the young ultra... I'm all for saying, okay, Pau Gasol, at this stage in your career, be, like, you know, a high-volume scorer against bench bigs. But, like, I think that the more that you respond that way to young, talented offensive centers, the more that you're stagnating their growth defensively.
I can't disagree with that. I think that Cantor will play more this season. I think that if Adams wasn't talented offensively and if he couldn't jump and move like he does, then I think that they would consider starting him. But I think that Adams can just bring it on every end of the court and in every way that they want him to. So I really think, I'm a Cantor apologist. I think that he's good and that he's useful, but I just don't, I can't put his importance over Adams. I would love for him to be better. I'd love for him to improve to where he can, I mean, if he was a starter and Adams came off the bench, I think that's a really interesting idea. And that's something that we even thought about at the beginning of last season because we haven't seen that whole team together, and it kind of made sense to bring Adams off the bench just because for the same reason for defense. But at this point, it's kind of hard to see, seeing that happen.
You know, the reason I brought up that Bobcats team with Al Jefferson is, like, it's shocking how much better your defense is when you tell your center, who's a good offensive rebounder, that he needs to just stop it and get back on defense. Cantor doesn't even need to get all that much better to have, at least from an advanced stats perspective, average defensive stats if he just, like, didn't bite on offensive rebounds every possession. If he just always went back and, like, settled in as a rim protector. And that's what the Hornet system did. Like, that's what Donovan would need to force him to do as a starter.
Yeah, I think Thunder have really targeted offensive rebounding as something that obviously the rest of the league doesn't do a whole lot, as something that they are going to do. It's a part of their scheme. It's a part of the reason why they have so many big guys. I mean, they have a ton of big guys that aren't going to even play this season that still have talent. And a lot of it's in rebounding. And some of that's a little bit confusing because you just wish they would invest more wing. They eventually will, but I would like to see them try. I'd like to see them try what you're saying because I do think that there's some merit to it.
Yeah, well, and that starting lineup, Kemba's not that different from Russell. Gerald Henderson isn't that different from Oladipo. Kid Gilchrist and Andre Roberson are really, really similar. So are Josh McRoberts and Ersan Ilyasova. And then Al Jefferson and Cantor was, like, the main comparison. Like, you can coach, you can coach a lineup like that into being a really good defense if you're George Karl. If Billy Donovan can be George Karl, then that would be awesome. And I also think that apples to apples, even though there's a whole lot of similarity between that Hornets team, which was a playoff team, you know, I think it was, you know, didn't they take the Heat, I think, or the Cavs? They took LeBron, like, the second round or to seven games or something. They were a lot better than you would think. And the Thunder are just straight up more talented than that. So
yeah, they were. I mean, that Hornets team was surprising all season. I mean, you couldn't, just like you said, I mean, they were an elite defense, and in a lot of ways it didn't make a ton of sense. It was just really good coaching.
Yeah. If Donovan sprung for something like that, we were describing the whole pick and roll and the whole like drop back idea and all the reasons why I think that the limited spacing between Adams, Oladipo, and Russell Westbrook, why I think that that main pick and roll action in the center with two spacers, why that doesn't work. I think a surprising amount of those concerns melt away when you put in Cantor instead of Adams in terms of like, is this going to be an effective offense? Because in terms of like post scoring, there's Boogie and then there's Cantor. And I think it's difficult to make an argument that they're is someone else who would be the second best post scorer in the game. And like Cantor is remarkably good at finishing over multiple defenders. And that's something that if you drop back three defenders or two defenders in the paint, right? They're either both going to pay attention to Cantor or Cantor will score, or one will pay attention to Russell Westbrook who's driving, and then one will pay attention to Cantor and Cantor will score because he can finish over one man always. Or they'll be safe over towards Cantor and give Russell Westbrook that little bit more breathing room to make it, you know, a backboard layup instead of like an off-balance floater or like a mid-range pull-up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been proven in the end of the 2014 or 2014-15 season whenever the Thunder missed the playoffs, that they had a really good offense with just basically Russ and Cantor. Like, those two can be the offense.
And
defense really struggles, but they can be their own offensive team, and the numbers have bear that out, and both players are better. Like, Russ is a better passer now, and Cantor is a really a better all-around player than he was when he first came to OKC. So, I mean, I'm buying that combination is going to be a really big deal for this team this year.
I mean, like, is Cantor... There's no reason why Cantor would be worse than Al Jefferson. And, like, you know, Kid Gilchrist is probably a bit better than Andre Roberson, but not dramatically.
Yeah, he's bigger. He's bigger. But, yeah, they're probably pretty... It's a good comp, for sure.
But, like... Even with Russell Westbrook's shortcomings, he's better than Kemba Walker. And, like, Oladipo, I'm wary about Oladipo, but my expectation is, though, that he'll be a lot closer to a superstar than people realize. Probably not a superstar, but, like, approaching that, you know?
Yeah, he'll be in, like, the all-star conversation. He probably won't make the all-star team. People will be like, oh, you know, who might be, should maybe be considered an all-star? Victor Oladipo.
I'm not sure about next year. I would maybe expect him to need to settle in, but, you know, 2 years from now, he should be pretty much like an all-star caliber. So I already Oladipo was in a stunningly fucked up Orlando situation. So did you know that Oladipo was the sixth best shooting guard in defensive real plus minus last year?
I've seen that, yes, which is really shocking.
Yeah. So if we're saying that, like, starting Westbrook and Cantor, that's, like, in of itself a good offense because Cantor can finish over multiple defenders and, like, be an ultra-efficient offense to the extent that it opens up a lot of breathing room for Russell Westbrook, and also he can space the floor a little bit, right? So, like, I buy into the offensive system that Oladipo, Russell Westbrook, plus Cantor creates. So, like, I think that's a feasible offense, right? And I think that if you have, you know... a top five, or we'll say like top 10 defender among guards with Oladipo, if Russell Westbrook can be a little bit less, I think that people think that he's superhuman because of his explosive bursts, but I think that he basically takes possessions off on defense, and if he can give over the reins to Oladipo more than he's probably personally comfortable with, and then like pay more attention on defense... that'll be like a big enough step back that it'll be significant. But I could buy into them replicating that Hornets defense with like Roberson's elite, Oladipo's elite. Russell Westbrook is such a good athlete that if he chose to alter his game a little bit, he could be at least good. And then like if you have Cantor, and then I guess you're low on Ersan Ilyasova, but you know, honestly, that power forward position, maybe the closest Josh McRoberts comparison on the team is I almost said Arvydas Sabonis, but Sabonis, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Sabonis will get his shot too, because, I mean, if Ilyasova is your surest thing at power forward, then you do not have a sure thing at power forward.
I think Ersan Ilyasova is good. Yeah, I like Ersan Ilyasova. I get why some people don't. Also, he's probably 31 or 32. If everyone's being honest with themselves. I mean, he's averaged over 45% from three more seasons than he hasn't, you know?
He's a good shooter, and I think that, I mean, he's going to fill that role. I just don't, I mean, we mentioned defensive real plus minus, like he was, I think he was like the third or fourth worst power forward in the league last year, which is really, really brutal. So I think that there will be time, I mean, he's going to have to play just because of the nature of the forward position, but I'm not real optimistic about him filling like a consistent role throughout the season. Like I would be surprised if he was a starting power forward heading into the playoffs, I'll say that.
Yeah. In the type of system I just described, that power forward position would be kind of, for me, the maybe the only question mark, actually, because like I'm convinced that Westbrook, Oladipo, and then Roberson and Cantor could all fill the roles that I set out for them. But I mean, between there's got to be like, if you average together, like, okay, there's like a 15% chance that King Joffrey works out as that power forward, and like a 30% chance that Sabonis works out, and like a 50% chance that Ersan Ilyasova works out, and like, you know, a 420% chance that Mitch McGarry works out. weed joke. Anyways, yeah. It's just like they did grasp at so many power forwards who look to play that position that, I mean, that's why I think that, like, you know, I said, I think there's a lot higher chance that Cantor's going to lead the team in scoring than people realize. And that's why. I think that they hedge their bets to play that way by getting a whole bunch of fours who could feasibly be like that.
Yeah, I mean, if that's his role and if that's the way they play, I think that that is definitely the path for him to be that, to be the leading scorer. If he can play 30 minutes a game. But I just wonder if the Thunder are going to be willing to, like, marginalize and maybe halt the growth of Steven Adams in that process.
Well, I think that actually it would probably do a lot for his growth to be like, I mean, he would have to be the Rudy Gobert of the bench unit. And plus, like, even if you're not starting Adams, like, you know, you could play him at that four position a lot, at least for the minutes that Andre Roberson is sitting. So you could, like, approximate the spacing with, you know, we'll say, then, like, you would need to put in, like, instead of Roberson, who's the Morrison? Is he the three-point shooter?
Morrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you pin Morrow to Steven Adams when you're playing him alongside Cantor, that might work out. I don't think it's good enough to start, though.
No, Morrow's he's a spot player, and he proved that last year. He should have had a bigger role last year if he could be more than that, but he's a spot player. He should have been able to take a bigger role because that shooting guard position just was maybe one of the worst in the league last year. He couldn't even stay in the rotation regularly, so he's a spot player for sure.
Yeah, the reason why I put him in specifically in the lineup that had Cantor and Adams is, like, he's got limited mobility, but a fast enough release that if he can't get a little bit of separation with screens that are set by Cantor and Adams, if he can't get separation for an open three, then he needs to, like, not be in the league. Because, like,
he's probably closer to not being in the league than some people realize, because he doesn't even run off screens. I mean, he's just feet planted. You know, if I'm open, throw me the ball. And he does have a very quick release. Like, he's got an elite release, but the fact that you can't run him off screens makes it pretty limited.
And then the other thing is, like, I'm not sure if it's just because he was so bad or because there's something about him that, like, his face is really punchable, But, like,
oh, yeah.
There's an argument to say that Kyle Singler could return under the mean a bit, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel that way. I feel like he's just shit because, like, that's what my heart wants, is for him to be bad because there's something about him I don't like. But, like, you know, if it were to happen, I could see kicking myself and being like, why did you let your emotions get in the way, Chris? Like, you should have known that this was going to happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he was so bad last year. Like, there's an argument for him being the worst player in the NBA last year. And he has a track record of being a pretty good NBA player. So there's most people out there very against Kyle Singler, Thunder fans. But there's a small growing faction of people that are wanting a Singler revolution. So it'll be interesting. He's going to play. Like, he just has to because... like we've talked about, the forward position is just probably the worst in the league, but we'll see. He's still a career 37% from three, even with his 30% last year. He's proven to be a basketball player in other locations, so maybe he can do that again next year. I'm a little dubious, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like it's not natural for sports fans to, like, consider things like off years or like what's going on in his personal mm-hmm. life or like, you know, just like the like little things that might snowball, like
humanizing a basketball player. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a natural process. If someone's bad and it's like a deviation, I feel like there is like an instinct to say, well, okay, this is just how it is. And it has to be a skill because like all this person is like the skill to play basketball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Much in the same way that I'm a fantastic podcaster, but, you know, sometimes I stay up way too late and I host long and winding podcasts about the Thunder that are like go on weird tangents and that are, you know, sort of bad. Much in the way that like that happens despite me being a really good podcaster on like a general level. You know, it's possible that it could just be something like that. Maybe he stayed up too late launching the Waiver Wire fantasy basketball podcast on Blog Talk Radio /ABPN. You know?
There's a very good chance that he's just had a really awful year, and we don't really know what's going on with him personally. So, and maybe just the pressure. Like, the pressure of playing for a team that, I mean, they've probably talked about, you know, winning a championship every day, and maybe he's just not a guy that's at the NBA level ready to handle that kind of pressure. I mean, that's just all the speculation in the world from that take. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, my heart is still telling me that it's impossible and he's just bad.
Right.
My heart is also telling me to, like, shove him in a locker and take his lunch money. But, like, my brain has to concede that, like, he could be good. Potentially. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'm going to let you go. You know Harrison Fagan by any chance?
Does he do like the Lockdown Lakers pod, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. He's going to be coming on the show tomorrow, and this situation sort of reminds me of it. I got my, on iTunes, like, my first one-star rating after my podcast with him. Someone commented, like, I was in a similar situation where, like, I just wasn't on my game, and, like, someone commented, I think it was, why doesn't the host ever shut the fuck up and let his guest speak? And, like, it's gonna be exciting for me tomorrow to, like, have him back on, because, like, I knew that I wasn't, like, up to snuff, and that tomorrow's gonna be dope because I, you know, I'm pretty great. So I'm looking forward to having a bounce back Kyle Singler podcast with you in the near future, so...
Yeah.
hopefully I can somehow figure out a way for this not to get me a one-star rating, though. If I can manage that, it'll be because my guest today was particularly excellent. You want to talk about your podcast, plug your Twitter, and do you write? If you write, I haven't read your writing. I've just listened to the Down or Dunk.
Yeah, I do a little bit of writing for Daily Thunder. Mostly kind of featured pieces, nothing super consistent.
But I do a Thunder Base NBA podcast called the Down to Dunk Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast. During the season, we'll do podcasts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we have a lot of fun. The purpose of our podcast is to talk about the Thunder in a really fun way and to dissect the game in a smart way. So please listen to us. And we also like to talk about bathroom humor things. So please join us.
Yeah, you should definitely do that. I have been listening to them for a really long time. Down to Dunk, I think, is the 7th podcast I subscribe to on iTunes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Check them out. Like I said, the Thunder, you know, if you just want some perspective on how fun Down to Dunk is and how, like, surprisingly insightful they are in between the jokes, you know, just just listen to, you know, Locked on Thunder and Thunder Buddies. And, man, listen to those and then recognize that I chose my guest for today I don't think that I could get your last name again. Okay, all right. I chose my guest today from the Down to Dunk podcast, Andrew Schlecht.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's meaningful. Did that make sense? I sort of tripped off.
No, I appreciate it. I've got to run, so thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I'll have you back on soon to talk about, Kyle Singler and
yeah, perfect.
All right.
Thanks, talk to man.
See ya.
Right, bye-bye.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flo.
When Flo flows, she flows in the know. Mind ruminates, the rates. Shown them all, I heed the call. Seeing the rest, I choose the best. Sometimes it's ours, sometimes it's not. When the fox walks, is it called a fox trot? That's a real question.
Compare Progressive direct rates with competitors' rates. Visit progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.